Hi, this is Dan Lynch. Coming up on Floss Weekly, we're going to talk to Gerald Coombs, who's the lead developer of Wireshark, the industry standard network analysis tool, which is, of course, free and open source software. That's coming up next on Floss Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 268, recorded the 9th of October, 2013. Wireshark. Hello and welcome to another Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I am your host for this week. My name is Dan Lynch, and you'll probably have noticed that I'm not Randall Schwartz. Unfortunately, Randall is bandwidth challenged, I think is the phrase, today. But I believe there may be a spirit of Randall around somewhere in the chat room who may kind of, you know, may just pop up now and again. I'm joined by Gareth Greenaway. Gareth, how are you doing?
I'm good, Dan. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. I was just saying before the show, it's the first time I think we've spoken live, so to speak.
Exactly, yeah. Most of our conversations have been time-lapsed, either Twitter or Facebook or the equivalent.
Yeah.
Yeah, first time speaking live.
And I've got to say, I mean, I'm sure this has happened before, but two Linux guys on the same show, is that allowed? Are we allowed to do that? We've done it. We've done it now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that might be one of those end of the world type scenarios, so we better be careful.
We better be careful not to create like a singularity or something
exactly.
And the world will just implode. Welcome back to another Floss Weekly. We're going to talk today about a project called Wireshark, which I have to confess I've used a few times and I have a little soft spot for, so we'll be finding more out about that. It's a network analysis tool, as the name would suggest. It's useful for examining packet traffic through wireless networks and things like that. And as some people will say, you can use it to try and crack encryption and so on wireless networks. You certainly can do that. We'll ask our guest Gerald about that in a minute. We're going to talk for a bit more about. Have you ever used Wireshark, Gareth? Are you familiar with it?
I have. Yeah, I've used it, like you said, a couple times for debugging network traffic.
Mm-hmm.
excuse me. I felt that coming.
Something going on.
I tried to fight it, but it didn't work.
That's okay.
Yeah. No, like I said, I've used it a couple times for debugging network traffic as well trying to hack wireless passwords, but making sure that wireless networks are secure. So I think it's one of those tools that can be used for nefarious purposes, but it also has many legitimate uses as well. And I'm sure Gerald will go into details about those for us.
Yeah, I mean, much like Nmap and all these kind of networking tools, you know, they can be used for certain things, but they're also very valuable diagnostic tools as well. Anyway, so we should introduce Gerald. So our guest today is Gerald Coombs, who is the original developer of Wireshark. Where are we speaking to you from today?
I'm in Davis, California.
And I believe that's...
I'm sorry, if it sounds like I have a cold, it's because everything is in bloom here all the time.
Okay. I believe that's not far from the studio, in fact, from the Twitch studio, somewhere near Petaluma, about an hour away, according to my sources.
Yeah, I believe so.
Ah, cool. So I gave a little bit of an introduction to Wireshark, my kind of ham-fisted description of Wireshark. I'm sure it wasn't very good. Can you give us a kind of a broad overview of what Wireshark is and how people would use it?
Sure. Wireshark's main goal is to show you what's happening on your network. That's the main question it answers. And that's the question I had to answer when I first started writing it. We actually celebrated our 15th anniversary, so you know, back in the late 90s. And I wrote it because I was working at an ISP and I needed to know what was going on the network. I made that first release and suddenly started getting contributions from around the world and it grew and grew. But, the project quickly grew to a basic troubleshooting tool, and you know, that was its original goal, and I think it does a really good job of that. But most people use it for network troubleshooting. And, you know, when I go around and talk to clients and talk to people, you know, that's their main use. But it's also popular in the security industry. You know, a lot of security people use it. And it's popular in education as well. You know, I get, you know, emails from educators all the time asking about Wireshark. And, you know, mainly from educators, it's, you know, to use Wireshark screenshots in their textbooks and things like that.
So, I mean, that's interesting. So are they using it to teach networking and so on?
Yes. Wireshark, I'm biased, but I think Wireshark does a better job than any other tool in the world at showing you exactly what's happening on the network, you know, down to the, you know, byte and bit level. That's due no small part to the development team, and it's a great development team, and it's a real honor to be able to work with these people.
Excellent. And you mentioned that it's 15 years old now. So, what was the initial catalyst or initial thing that made you want to start the project? Were you trying to do something on a network, and you thought I need a better tool for this? Where did it all kind of come from?
That's basically it. I was working at an ISP in the Midwest and in the, you know, almost exact geographic center of the US. And, you know, I'd used commercial products before to monitor the network. And, I was working at the ISP and we didn't have a lot of money. And so I ended up writing my own tool to analyze the network. And as I said, I made that, you know, initial release. It was version 0.2.0 in August of 98. And immediately started getting contributions from around the world. And, you know, the project, I haven't stopped getting contributions since, and the project has been growing ever since.
And obviously there's quite a group of people working on this. So, I mean, how many people are kind of working on it? Are you getting a lot of commits coming in and so on?
It's a constant stream. It quickly grew into something that I couldn't handle myself. So, you know, I quickly had to go from, you know, checking code into this, or, you know, managing code in this little directory by myself to, you know, spinning up a CVS server. You have to remember, this was before sites like SourceForge existed, much less, you know, GitHub or Bitbucket. So back then you had to do everything yourself. I remember a while back I talked to Gordon Lyon, you know, Fyodor, the author of Nmap, and Mike Kershaw, who wrote Kismet. And, you know, we all kind of started at the same time, and we kind of evolved our projects the same way. You know, we kind of spun up our own web servers and our own, you know, source code repositories and all these other things. And, you know, it's funny that we, you know, looking at it, we kind of manage our websites and projects the same way even today.
But you've never actually talked to each other about, you know, setting stuff out like that. It just happened that way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it wasn't until, you know, years later, maybe 10 or 12 years later, that we kind of started talking and thought, you know, it dawned on us that we kind of evolved in the you know, along the same path.
Yeah, and I mentioned in the introduction, I actually mentioned Nmap, which anybody's ever done any kind of network security stuff or even just network analysis and so on will probably have come across things like Nmap. Is there any kind of comparison between Nmap and Wireshark at all?
Only at a very superficial level. I mean, you know, both of them, you know, sort of, you know, well, Nmap generates packets and then looks at the responses. Wireshark just looks at the traffic going across the network. I mean, they're very much complementary to each other.
Excellent. Okay, then. So let's take a step back and talk about all the different things we can do with Wireshark. I mean, I've used it mainly on Linux systems, to be honest, but you can use it on Linux or Windows or Mac, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah. Two stories there. One is, you know, at the very dawn of the project, I'll confess, when I first started working on the project, I was a really big Unix bigot and Linux bigot. Prior to that, I was president of the Kansas City Unix User Group. I loved Unix. I had no use for Windows. I thought it was just an awful operating system and kind of useless. Shortly after that, a couple of guys in Italy who I ended up working with wrote a network driver or a capture driver for Windows called WinPCAP. And one of our developers ported, well, you know, we were called Ethereal at the time, but he ported Ethereal over to Windows, and suddenly we were really popular because, you know, who knew that Windows was so popular? But anyway, That's when the project really took off. And shortly after that, the vast majority of our users were Windows users, and that's been the case since. The second story is that, you know, we support, you know, Mac OS, but we don't really do a good job of it. And one of the big changes in the next release is that we're porting Wireshark over to a different UI toolkit from GTK to Qt. And that's going to give OS X users a much better experience.
Oh, that's interesting. And why did you go for Qt specifically? I know it's great cross-platform. Did you evaluate any others, like maybe WX widgets or any of those things?
Yeah, I looked at a few of the others, but Qt just seemed to be the most, you know, polished and complete. Things were kind of shaky there for a while they were, you know, under the sponsorship of Nokia, but things are a lot better now. And, I was looking at the upcoming release, or the release notes for the upcoming 5.2 release, and, they're even adding support for Android and iOS. So, you know, people keep screaming at me for Wireshark on an iPad, and maybe we can do that now, but we'll see.
Yeah. Excellent. And since we talked a bit about toolkits and how it's all kind of put together, what languages is this written in, and what kind of resources are you using to build Wireshark?
Up until the Qt port started, we were straight C. I mean, just even C80, C89. We weren't even modern C. So things have changed a little bit since the Qt port, because, you know, we actually have C++ code, you know, horror of horrors in the code base now. But, things are slowly evolving. And ever since the project started, you know, along with C, we've had a lot of support scripts and dissector generators and things like that written in things like mainly Python, but also Perl. You know, we have a lot of Perl support scripts as well. A while back we added support for writing dissectors and modules in Lua, and we kind of have partial Python support for plugins as well.
So what's the most interesting plugin so far that you've seen someone write for Wireshark?
One that sticks out, you know, is a long time ago, somebody added support for MP3 files. We have this dissector now for MP3 data, which is fine. I mean, that's data that's sent over a network, and it's good to be able to analyze that. But we can also open MP3 files. So if you want to go see if, say, the variable bit rate in your MP3 file is actually varying, you can go do that.
So would that be like you would be monitoring your network to see if someone is transferring MP3 files, or can you go into a little more detail about what that plugin does?
It's a dissector. It's two things. It's a packet, you know, an MP3 data dissector, meaning that, you know, the MP3 file format comes in little chunks, and those chunks can be sent over a network or they can sit in a file. Wireshark can handle either. Meaning that, you know, if you have MP3 data going across, HTTP3 or HTTP or even RTP, I'll have to double check the code. But anyway, you have MP3 data going across your network, you can actually go and look in the individual chunks and see what's going on. But along with that, the person who contributed this contributed support for MP3 files. So you can, you know, if you have a collection of MP3s on your computer, you can go open them in Wireshark.
Oh, okay. So you can actually use Wireshark as an MP3 player?
Nope. You can actually view the MP3 data.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Same with, we support ping and JPEG and JFIF the same way.
I see. Okay. Interesting. So what is the contributing community like with Wireshark? How many active contributors do you have at the moment?
At any given time, we probably have, you know, between 1 and 3 dozen people who are really actively working on the project. And, we have a few dozen core developers, but, you know, most of them are, most of them, you know, work on it off and on. But, you know, just this, I guess, core within a core are active, you know, most of the time.
Okay. There was a question.
But as far as the developers go, we have a wide variety of people working on the project, from students to, people at multinational corporations. There are a lot of corporations who have a lot of either public or private protocols that they support. And so it's kind of a no-brainer, usually for them to assign an engineer to, work on Wireshark.
Okay. Do those private protocols, how does that work in terms of, I assume they are the ones adding support for them? Do those private protocols eventually make it into the main code base, or they kind of remain in a separate version?
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. We have some protocols in Wireshark that I know have a very limited scope, and you would only see in just a few networks around the world. But I think the vast majority of private protocols are kept within each corporation, which is fine. It's still within the confines of the GPL, but I think there are a lot of kind of custom Wireshark installers out there that people distribute within their companies.
So Wireshark is released under the GPL license?
Yes.
Which version?
Two. Actually, okay. Two or later.
Two or later. What motivated you to choose that license over some of the others?
It was just at the time that I started working on Wireshark, I'd used a lot of GPL software, and I had depended on it, and it just seemed like the it was the most appealing license at the time, and I think it's actually worked out well for the project.
Okay. What is, if someone wanted to kind of get started with Wireshark today, if they wanted to, they decided they wanted to take a look at kind of analyzing their network, what would the kind of steps that they would take be? How would they get started?
Really simply, just download it and start running it. You can do an initial capture just from your desktop and get an idea of the traffic going on your local LAN. But if you want to start analyzing data on your network, you need to learn about how to set up capture points and where the best places to set up a capture point are on your network and things like that. And we're really fortunate in that we have quite a few people, most notably Laura Chappell, who do training for Wireshark. Wireshark actually has this huge ecosystem around it, and we're really, really fortunate to have a lot of really talented people, doing education and making products that support Wireshark and things like that.
Okay. Can you talk to us a bit about T-Shark, what that is, what it does, why it exists?
T-Shark is the command line version of Wireshark. It works a lot like TCP dump, but it actually takes most of Wireshark's command line options and most of the, not all the stuff you can do in the GUI, but a great deal of it you can also do in T-Shark. Like if you want to dump a conversation table, you can do that within T-Shark. And if you want to dump, if you want to see the detail for a series of packets and see that whole dissection tree, you can do that within T-Shark. And you can do both capture and display filtering and things like that.
Okay, so would it be a fair assessment that anything you can do in the Wireshark graphical interface, you can do on the command line using T-Shark?
Like I said, most of the things. There are a few features like the IO graphs and the big Wireshark feature, which is to see to open up a conversation. And see a TCP stream. You can't really do that in T-Shark yet, although there's been talk about doing that.
Okay. What was SharkFest?
SharkFest is our annual developer and user conference, and the first SharkFest was in 2008, and it's held in the Bay Area each year in June, and I think it's great. But somebody once told me that it's the only conference they had been to where presenters go to see each other's sessions. Most conferences, a presenter shows up and then leaves. But at SharkFest, the presenters actually go and see what's happening elsewhere. And we present on a wide variety of topics. I mean, the vast majority are of course using Wireshark and to do various things, either basic analysis or high level analysis or analysis in specific fields or like wireless or security and or IPv6. But we also have a lot of presentations on things that people do that are related to Wireshark. I know each year Mike Kershaw presents on whatever interesting thing he's doing that year, like Zigbee captures or something like that. A couple of years ago, we had a presentation from somebody at Microsoft who talked about a project they had come up with called Daemon, which stands for Distributed Ethernet Monitoring, and they took all these Arista switches and kind of built this huge distributed network tap using these programmable switches, which was really cool, and it's a really interesting application of SDN, and it was a really interesting presentation.
So if I'm using Wireshark and I've analyzed my network, or even if I have like an existing capture of some network data, can I plug that into Wireshark and kind of replay what I've looked at?
Wireshark doesn't have playback yet. There are other tools that'll do that, like TCP replay and Ostinato will do that. But it's been a requested feature for a long time, and it wouldn't surprise me if it shows up at some point. But it's Wireshark right now is read only.
Okay, so it's not it's real time, not working with historical data.
Well, yeah, you can bring up historical data, and people use that. People do that quite a bit with Wireshark. But as far as playback goes, we don't really support that yet.
Okay. What's the most interesting use you've seen someone use Wireshark for? Interesting use case.
Suddenly you've stumped me. But I don't know. I see people use it last week I went and talked to a bunch of clients. I flew to London and talked to my employer's Riverbed, and I talked to some of the Riverbed clients. But I get one of the benefits of working for this company is that I get to go around and talk to people that I otherwise wouldn't be able to talk to. And it's funny. These are all large corporations with huge network monitoring budgets, and every last one of them said, "Oh, and we're feeding this data through T-Shark," which just blows my mind. They have their choice of any product that they could ever want to use, and to monitor this, to get this data, we're kind of passing it through T-Shark. So that it's not unusual, but it's still kind of interesting to me that here we have this little tiny I won't say tiny, but this little command line application that's being used by these people to pull whatever data they need out of their network.
Right. So at one point, Wireshark was known as Ethereal. What prompted the name change?
Well, earlier I mentioned that a couple of guys from Italy wrote something called WinPCAP, which is a packet capture driver for Windows. In the mid-2000s, as I said, we had a bunch of Windows users. And around that time, wireless had really taken off. .11 was really getting big, and .11 wasn't really that reliable. There were a lot of problems with it, and there kind of still are. But you had all these people, they're on Windows, they're running Wireshark, they want to do wireless capture. And if you remember back in that time, if you ever tried to do wireless capture on Windows, it just plain didn't work. I mean, most of the time, your wireless adapter shut off, which is no good, when you enabled promiscuous mode. So I sent an email to the developers of WinPCAP, Loris DeJuani and Gianluca Vereni, and said, is there some way we can fix this? Because, at that time, whenever somebody sent in a question saying, hey, I'm using Windows and I want to do wireless capture, the standard answer was, go install Linux, you loser, ha, ha, ha. That's not a good answer. So I sent an email to Loris and Gianluca and said, is there a way to fix this? And they said yes. And they had joined a startup here in Davis. And so I flew out to talk to them. And And from that came a wireless driver for Windows called AirPCAP. And, you know, that was, you know, AirPCAP was sold by a company called Case Technologies. And while they were developing this, they asked me if I wanted to join Case. And, it was a big decision because, you know, that meant moving my family, you know, from the Midwest to the West Coast. And you know, that was a big change. And it also meant probably changing the name of the project because my employer was the one who actually owned the trademark for Ethereal. And as it turned out, you know, my previous employer are wonderful people, but for whatever reason, we just couldn't come to an agreement on transferring the trademark. So I ended up having to change the name of the project. So we went from Ethereal to Wireshark. And it was funny, you know, everybody was stressing out about the name changes. You know, I was just, you know, a nervous wreck. And I'd sent an email to the core developer list and said, you know, look, we're going to have to change the name. Is that okay? And you know, the response almost unanimously was, you know, that's too bad. Where's the new SVN server? I want to check in code. So it went a lot more smoothly than I could have hoped, and that was fortunate. But another thing was that, you know, as far as the new name went, we came up with a short list of names for the project, and you know, I showed them to my wife, and she's the one who actually picked Wireshark. So actually, that turned out to be a great name, I think. I've had people come up to me after the name change and you know, say that they like Wireshark a lot better than they like Ethereal.
Yeah, it does seem a bit more kind of descriptive in a way, and it's cool. I don't know, but I mean, I've got to mention, when you were talking about SharkFest, I was looking at this earlier today. I was looking up SharkFest and so on, and I came up with this really silly question, but I'm just wondering if you've ever thought of spreading SharkFest out over a week so you could call it Shark Week? What do you reckon? Maybe Discovery Channel would give you problems then, I don't know. Maybe yeah, they'd have trademark issues.
Yeah, and I think we're close enough to Shark Week on Discovery Channel to where that would be a bit confusing.
Maybe. I was curious about, we've talked a bit about contributors. There are a lot of contributors, big community developing on it. But I'm curious about the structure of how the development and so on works. Are you kind of the benevolent dictator of the project, or is there anyone else who can make decisions as to what happens?
At one point, the core developer started referring to me as fearless leader, you know, from Bullet Hill.
Okay.
So all the backend stuff I handle, like the, you know, the web servers and the infrastructure. And Riverbed, you know, our primary sponsor pays for all that. So that's a good arrangement. I try to set up an environment where all the other developers can basically get their job done and get it done easily and effectively. So, you know, we over time have had to, you know, kind of change and you know, evolve our infrastructure to kind of meet the demands of both the users and the developers. And sometimes I do a good job, sometimes I don't. I try to do the best I can.
No, no. I was just going to say, because you mentioned your primary sponsor and so on. We had some questions about this in the IRC. People were saying, "What's this Riverbed who sponsored them and so on?" Now, is Riverbed your company? This is the primary sponsor. How does that all kind of work?
Well, okay. I mentioned that AirPCAP was developed by a company called Case Technologies, which I joined, and we were a very small startup. You know, we only had a few products. Case developed a product called Pilot, which is a high-level analysis tool. Which can, you know, you can read in multiple gigabytes of capture data and, you know, look at it graphically and then drill down and say, highlight a little bit of a graph. The cool thing about Pilot is there's a send to Wireshark button. So, you know, it integrates with Wireshark on that level. So you just select some of the packets that you want to see out of, you know, maybe a meg or so out of a, you know, several gigabytes of capture data and send that to Wireshark so that you can more quickly and effectively, you know, analyze packets. I mean, from my perspective, I want you looking at packets, but I don't want you looking at boring packets. I want you to look at the packets that matter. And so, you know, the products that Riverbed make let you do that. Now, the connection between Case and Riverbed is that a couple of years ago in 2010 at SharkFest, by that time, well, SharkFest was initially sponsored by Case and set up by Case. But in 2010, this company called Riverbed showed up to SharkFest, and they had some NetFlow analysis products, and they were looking for, to expand their product line with packet-based solutions. And they came and talked to us and ended up acquiring us, and that's how I came to work for Riverbed and how Riverbed came to sponsor Wireshark.
Oh, excellent. Okay. And obviously, I mean, the project's been around a good while. We talked about it 15 years and so on. But I'm curious to know, like, what new exciting things do you think you can bring into Wireshark, and what's the kind of, the future plans?
Well, the big future plan right now is the new user interface. We're migrating from G2K to Qt, and that's a big job. I don't know how long it's going to take. We're probably a third to halfway, through. But hoping by sometime, probably late next year, we'll have the final release with Qt in it. But internally, we've also recently changed our memory management code. So hopefully that will more effectively. It's at least easier to code against. There are a lot of evolutionary changes that we're making in the product, but probably the big user-facing change is the change in the toolkit.
I was curious to know about some of the big challenges you've got coming up, because obviously the interface is going to be a big development, I would imagine, and a big challenge. But is there anything else that's kind of, keeping you up at night or making you worry about it at all?
At SharkFest this year, when I gave my presentation, I had a list of challenges on one of the slides, and one of the bullet points was 100 GBase. Ouch, that hurts. The fact is, networks are getting faster and faster, and the volumes of traffic are getting higher and higher, and we're getting to the point to where it's not only hard to capture packet data, it's hard to capture NetFlow data. People are switching, even from NetFlow to sampling NetFlow or SFlow. The volumes are getting huge, and I don't know how we're going to deal with that. if you capture on a 10 or a 40 or 100 gig network, if you even capture for a second, you end up with a huge amount of data. And as I said, I want you looking at packets, but not the boring ones. We need to figure out how to sift through all that data and get down to the in-stream packets.
Yeah, I mean, I was curious as to whether there's any kind of cooperation between Wireshark and say the kernel or something that could, where the kernel could just pass on packets that are interesting in some way, or there was any. Yeah, but it sounds like that's obviously something that you're already thinking about.
Yeah, the kernel already addresses that a little bit with BPF, which was the Berkeley packet filter was actually developed by the founder of Riverbed. So that's kind of a cool connection there too, there are some people working on it. Luca Deary, who wrote NTOP, is doing a lot of work, trying to ensure that you can actually capture packets at high rates. But as far as filtering out and figuring out what traffic is interesting, there's still a little bit of work to be done there.
And you mentioned Riverbed again. We're still getting questions in the IRC coming through. Someone was asking about is there a commercial version of Wireshark that Riverbed would sell, or is it different in any way to the open source version? Is there anything else going on there?
No. The cool thing about working for Riverbed is that Wireshark we have autonomy. We are our own independent thing. They're very clear and specific about letting Wireshark be Wireshark. And as far as integration goes and having a pro version of Wireshark, the closest thing we had to that is say Pilot and the Shark appliance and the other Riverbed RPM product line components that let you analyze huge volumes of capture data and kind of distill that down. And drill down to, if you need to, look at packets, and then you pass those packets on to Wireshark, we're still sort of an independent thing. When Riverbed acquired us, there's a lot of concern and justifiably so about Riverbed, say taking Wireshark proprietary or making it private, but that wasn't the intent, and it certainly hasn't been the case that, you know, that they wanted to do that.
And in fact, I'm a bit of a licensing geek. I'm certainly no lawyer by any stretch. But wouldn't the fact that you're under GPL V2 kind of scupper most plans to take it proprietary anyway, I would have thought?
Yeah, it would. I mean, to take right now, to change the license for Wireshark, you'd have to get approval from several hundred people. I think we're up above 700 people in the authors list now, maybe 800. And and it's not something I would want to do anyway. Yeah, you know, I like the fact that we're under the GPL, and I think it really works out for the best because, you know, being under the GPL, you kind of have this social contract that says that, you know, okay, if you contribute to this project, it's always going to be open and free, and you know nobody's going to go take it private.
And yeah, I mean, that it hasn't ever presented you with any kind of problems trying to integrate other libraries and things that are not compatible in any way?
A little bit. I mean, lately, one library in particular, GNU TLS, we had to make sure that we were using, you know, GNU TLS for a while was under GPL version, or actually LGPL version 3. And, you know, they went from 2.1 to 3, and now they're, I believe, back to 2.1. So we have this range of GNU TLS versions that we can't really compile against, at least on, you know, and then, you know, distribute and standard GPL 2. I guess the answer to that is, well, you know, we need to move to GPL 3, but that's a whole big other, you know, mess. But I think we're going to probably see this more and more as time goes on, as, you know, as projects and libraries move to from 2 to 3. As I recall, the Free Software Foundation's recommendation is to, you know, if you're LPGL version 3, you know, go ahead and make an exception for GPL 2 projects. And a lot of people are doing that, but not everybody.
And it sounds as though you've probably already kind of mentioned this when you were talking there, but with copyright assignment and so on, everybody who contributes is keeping their own copyright. You don't ask them to sign anything or contribute, you know, hand over any copyright, as some projects do.
I didn't do that initially, and so, you know, that kind of set a tone, and I don't do that today. You know, if you write some code, it's your code. I don't. You know, other projects ask for copyright assignment, and it really depends on the project and their development model and their business model. You know, a lot of open source projects, you know, when they start up, they don't realize you have to have at least some semblance of a business model if you want to, you know, sustain your project. You know, it's a lot easier nowadays. You just, a lot of people's business model is just upload to GitHub and you're done. You know, that's an easy business model. But, you know, early on, you know, like I was talking about before, you know, hosting sites like that didn't exist, so you had to come up with some sort of sponsorship or sustainability model.
And we're getting lots of interest from the IRC, which is great. And another question just coming through. People are asking about any competitive or comparable open source projects, or maybe even commercial projects that you kind of, you know, you guys see as competitors or in the same market?
I think the closest competitor would be, you know, TSpeedDump, but we're not really competitors. I mean, we share, you know, a lot of the people who develop for Wireshark also develop for TSpeedDump. So when issues come up, we typically work together, I don't feel that there's a lot of real competition there. I guess T-Shark and TSpeedDump compete on certain levels, I will say that I'm running TSpeedDump on 2 servers right now, you know, doing a continuous capture. But a lot of people, you know, will. If you're a hardcore geek, you might look at TSpeedDump output directly. But a lot of people will do capture in TSpeedDump and then pull, you know, on a remote server and then pull that capture locally and look at it in Wireshark.
So right now, what languages, as far as like spoken languages, human languages, does Wireshark support? What languages are you looking to translate it to?
Right now, it's English, and this has been a question that's come up several times, you know, over the course of the years on the user and developer list, and early on, you know, people said, well, can we do a translation to you know, language X? And usually the response from people who, you know, don't speak English as a first language, the response is usually, at least in the past, been, well, all the standards are in English, so, you know, let's just keep Wireshark in English. But lately that's been changing, and, you know, the Qt port actually has language modules for, I believe, French, German, and Chinese. I'll have to double check, but we're actually expanding out into multiple languages now, which I think is actually pretty cool. And the you know, the training has kind of gone that way too. You know, Laura Chappell's books, you know, she of course writes her books in English, but they get translated to a bunch of different languages. So I think Wireshark may be following, you know, or she may be influencing that, you know, through the translations of her books. People may be, you know, wanting to see Wireshark in their own language.
Cool. So if someone's using Wireshark and they're looking for, they get stuck, they need some help, what are the support mechanisms that are in place by the Wireshark community? Where can someone turn?
Traditionally, we've had the Wireshark users mailing list, and we've had that almost since the project's inception, you know, before it was called Ethereal Users. But yeah, that mailing list has always been there, and you can always send an email there. It's you have to be subscribed, or else your messages get moderated, which, you know, kind of add a little bit of lag there. But a few years ago, I added a question and answer site called ask.wireshark.org, running OSQA, which is a, you know, kind of an open source version of Stack Exchange. And that's actually been, I think, very successful. We have a lot of people on there who you know, are very eager to answer questions and are very helpful. And I have to say, the community in general, one of the things I'm really proud of and really happy about is that the community itself is very supportive and you know, very congenial.
Cool. That's great. So I would imagine, like most open source projects, you never seem to have enough people. There's always more work than people that are helping out. What if any particular areas does Wireshark need help in? If someone was looking to get involved in the project and they were looking for something to do, like what areas are really need help with the project?
Right now, just because I'm working on this particular part of the source, I would say the Qt port. There's just a lot of code to still be written there. But in general, you know, there's always a new dissector that needs to be written. If you look through the bug tracker, there are all these feature requests for, you know, various either features or protocol dissectors to be written. If you do want to get started with developing Wireshark, the easiest thing to do is probably, you know, spin up Linux and install the, you know, say the GNU toolchain and some of the support libraries, and then, you know, just start coding.
Is there like a wish list, kind of a feature list? These are like features that people would like to see online somewhere that someone can reference?
Yeah, we have a wish list on our wiki, and it's actually quite long right now. I mean, it's just, you know, over the course of 15 years, you get a lot of requests for a lot of different things.
Right. What version control system does Wireshark currently use?
Right now we use Subversion, but we're in the process of kind of migrating to Git.
Okay. What prompted the original choice, and then what prompted the change?
Well, we started out using CVS. That worked for a long time, but, you know, we needed to do things CVS couldn't, like, say, you know, rename directories and rename files and things like that. And SVN turned out to be, you know, a lot more flexible in that regard. And SVN has actually worked out really well for us. But right now, you know, we have a lot of developers who are, you know, really productive and Git and used to using Git. So, you know, I think we're ultimately going to migrate to that, just, you know, to better support their needs.
Will it be like your own kind of hosted Git repo, or will you be on something like GitHub?
We're looking at hosting our own using Garrett.
Okay. Going back to what we were talking about the kind of the translations, the language translations, a lot of your work around the user interface, how does that kind of affect the translation? Have you had to kind of rethink any of that, that aspect of the project?
Not really. I have to say that Qt makes that pretty easy. You just set up a language module in Qt, and you know, it's. I don't do the translation work myself, but it seems like, you know, the people doing the translation work, I haven't heard many complaints from them. I'll say that. So that, you know, that seems to be going well for them.
That's good. Is there anything else that we've missed so far that you want to make sure we mention?
Let's see. Along with I mentioned Laura Chapel. She you know, writes a lot of books, you know, on using Wireshark and on protocol analysis. She's great. She also runs a certification program, so you can get Wireshark certified, which is I think that's pretty cool. I checked with her yesterday, and we have people who are certified in I think 34 countries now. So you know, she's much more involved with that than I am, but you know, that's a pretty interesting statistic, I think.
Hmm. So I'm afraid that the clock is almost beaten us, has almost beaten us, I should say. but I have to ask Randall's two favorite questions. Although he's not here, he's around in spirit, as we mentioned somewhere. So I have to ask, what's your favorite scripting language and why?
My favorite scripting language is Python.
Randall's not going to be happy. no, I'm joking.
No, I actually, you know, I've written a lot of Perl code in the past, and I can still, you know, I still do from time to time. But I have to say, Python. I don't know. I have a feeble memory, so you know, going back and looking at Python code that I've written in the past, it's a lot more easier, a lot easier to do that, you know, and see what I was thinking and what was going on. So it just seems to fit my coding style better.
Mm. And of course, we have to ask what your favorite text editor is. That's an incredibly geeky question.
I actually use Vim quite a bit. And
I love Vim. Don't worry, I love Vim. Randall's not going to be happy.
And there's one called Komodo Edit it's a GUI editor that uses the Mozilla toolkit, it lets me, you know, run on multiple platforms. A lot of people have been recommending Sublime Edit to me lately, and you know, so I'll probably look at it at some point. But I don't know, when you're secure shelled into a remote machine, nothing, you know, beats just pulling up Vim and editing a file and being done. So. Plus, I have all the keyboard shortcuts, you know, kind of hard-coded in my brain by now.
Yeah, I think that's the way it tends to work with a lot of people. You kind of learn the muscle memory. You learn the shortcuts, yeah. And then it kind of sticks in. And I was just looking on your little biography there in 2003 you were given the UM. I'm reading this off the screen in case anyone can't tell. the UMKC Alumni Achievement Award for contributions to the field of computer science. That must feel pretty cool.
Yeah, that was really awesome. That was completely unexpected, and that's where I got my computer science degree. And I still don't know what to think about it. Yeah, I show up for work, and I write code and make sure servers are up, and that's what I do. You know, during, you know, most days, and so yeah, it doesn't feel like something that warrants an award. So,
still nice though. Do you get a big medal or anything? Do you get like a? Oh, you do. Wow. Okay.
Well, we got a plaque. So.
Okay. A plaque's cool. Okay. A plaque's cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, it shows how, you know, how highly considered Wireshark is and how important it's been to a lot of people. So that's very cool. Anything else you want to mention very quickly before we sign off?
Something I was. I can't stress enough that Wireshark, you know, is the success that it is because of the development team, and it's a great team of people to work with, and it's a really big honor to work with these people, and it's something that gives me joy every day going in and seeing these people do their thing.
Excellent. Okay, then. I think time has finally beaten us. So thank you very much, Gerald, for coming on and talking to us. It's been a pleasure. And, you know, if you want to use that Shark Week idea, you can have it. It's fine. I don't mind. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, then. So that was Gerald Coombs, who is the lead developer of Wireshark. So really interesting discussion. Gareth, what did you think about all that?
I think it's interesting. It's one of the things that I really like about ever since Randall, I emailed and he invited me to co-host the shows, is you kind of have an idea about what a project does from using it, but you get to talk to someone that is developing it, and you really get a sense of it expands your mind in terms of like tenfold of what the project can do. So some of the stuff that he mentioned that the Wireshark is doing or the features they're planning for Wireshark is just it's really exciting to see. And it's one of those things that's like at least I do. I'm sure like other people out there want to as well. Just fire it up and let it run and then come back in a couple hours and see what it found.
Yeah. I mean, I like many people, as I mentioned at the start, I've kind of dabbled with Wireshark quite a bit, but I wouldn't say by any stretch I really actually know what I'm doing, like many things in life. But, you know, it's like so many things. But it seems like a very cool tool. And I was interested that there's obviously a demand for, iOS versions and Android versions and so on. People use them on touchscreens. So that's interesting that they're looking to port to another UI toolkit just for that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, most everyone now has a smartphone, either iOS or Android or some variant. So I'm sure they're interested to see like what Wireshark can find on the various networks that they're taking their smart devices to. And I'm sure I'm sure in a lot of people's minds it's a lot less conspicuous walking in somewhere with a smartphone running Wireshark than it is like walking around the halls of the laptop.
That's very true. I'm just waiting for the day when we reach that point like you always see on television programs and sci-fi films and stuff where someone walks in with a touchpad, presses a button and disables a whole, you know, wireless network and an alarm system and stuff. That just doesn't seem quite there yet, but maybe we can get there. All right, and so we didn't mention, in fact, if you want to find out more about Wireshark, you want to download it, you want to install it, find the support forums and so on, you need to head to wireshark.org. .org. That's their web address. Or have a look on the show notes for this very show, and you can find it there. All right, and so in the coming weeks, we've got more fabulous guests coming up. We have next week, we've got Jason Kridner. I hope I've said that right, Jason, from BeagleBoard. BeagleBoard's very cool. The little open source, open hardware boards that you can use. Kind of, I mean, for me, BeagleBoard, before the Raspberry Pi became like the cool thing, BeagleBoard was around, and that kind of almost was like they might not like me saying this, but it seemed felt a bit like a predecessor. And of course, it's still around, still doing great things. And we're going to find out more about that from Jason next week. Aaron will be along for that, and Randall should be back, all being well. Week after that, we've got Tim Sutton and Gary Sherman, who are coming in from QGIS. And if I just quickly switch over to my other screen here, I can tell you that this is all coming from the QGIS website, I should point out. But it says, it's a free and open source geographic information system. So I'm afraid I don't know a massive amount about that, but I'll be tuning in to find out more, and you should do the same. We got a little gap. We're looking to schedule someone in, I think, the week after that. And then on the week of November the 6th, Wednesday, November the 6th, I'll be in the big host's chair again, and Aaron will be along, and we'll be talking to Thomas Pearl, who's the developer of GPodder, which I know pretty well, and it's a Linux and it actually works on other systems as well, but it's a podcatcher, and it's they've got a web service and all kinds of cool stuff. So we're talking to Thomas about that, and of course we'll have many more great guests coming up in the coming weeks. All right, and so if you want to get in touch with us, you want to give us some feedback, or you want to suggest people for the show, the best thing to do is you can find us on Twitter. It's at Floss Weekly. You can send us tweets and so on. You can head to twit.tv and find stuff on there. Find Floss Weekly. Look in the show notes. There's always information and links in the show notes to check out. There's a live chat as we're going along. We mentioned the IRC quite a bit today. There is an IRC channel which is buzzing away as we go along, and you can find information about that on live.twit.tv as well. There's links there and the sidebar and stuff. So jump in there, get involved in the chat as we go along. And if there's a certain project that you think you'd like to see on the show, you would like to hear on the show, and the easiest way to do that is to contact the project if you can, and you know, speak to a developer or somebody involved and ask them to drop us an email, and we'll get them scheduled in. And if they email Randall at merlin@stonehenge.com, that's the address you need, then we can get them scheduled in. It's the fastest way, because we've got so many projects. There's so many great open source projects out there that, you know, trying to get them all organized into a schedule is a challenge. So if they can do that, it helps us get them to the top of the list. All right, then. So if you want to find out anything about what I'm up to, you can find me at danlynch.org, and my links to Twitter and Google Plus and all those other kind of places, Facebook and so on, they're all on there. So I won't bore you with lengthy plugs and stuff. So go on and check out that. Gareth, anything you want to tell us about what you're up to and so on?
I'll plug my usual plug that I plug each time. So Scale, Scale is coming up February 2014 in hopefully sunny Los Angeles. It's a little rainy here today, but hopefully that'll have cleared up by February. I'm sure it will. So if anyone is interested in attending or speaking, our call for papers is now open. So SoCalLinuxExpo.org has all the relevant information, as well as dates, call for papers, contact information for anyone, any questions anyone has, concerns, etc.
Excellent. And I should have mentioned, in fact, that we're both actually organizing open source conferences to some degree. OggCamp is coming up next week, end of next week. It is the 19th and 20th of October, next weekend. And there are still a few tickets. I do mean a few, literally a few tickets left if you go to oggcamp.org and sort that out. I don't think we're quite at the same... I was going to say the same scale. That's really bad, isn't it? But I don't think we're quite at the same scale. I'm full of puns today. But don't think we're quite at the same scale yet. But yeah, we should definitely talk sometime about organizing Linux conferences and doing some kind of exchange. That'd be cool. I will get to scale one day. excellent. Okay, so thank you. Thanks very much for coming on and co-hosting, Gareth. It's always a pleasure.
Yep. Glad to do it.
Okay, then. All right. So Randall will be back next time, and you'll be in his capable hands. Until then, you know, take care of yourselves, and thank you for watching Floss Weekly.